The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is October 23rd, 2015, and we are sponsored by Dr. William Wong. That's Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com. Dr. Wong is on here monthly. In fact, he's on next Friday afternoon, and he is sponsoring me for Iceland when I can get there next year in 2016. So go out to docsprefer.com, Sorenex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. They're sponsoring me, too. They sent a beautiful diamond bar to me. This bar is a trap bar that's oversized that you can pull in the power rack and press overhead. The handles are a little bit oversized. It's one of the best bars I've ever used. And little Al, who trains here, he's going to go tomorrow for a 270-pound record with that bar. He loves that trap bar. So I'm going to send some footage to Bert, too, on it. And Bert's on here monthly. His dad, Richard, is on here usually every 2 or 3 months. Thank you once again for your generosity. Hearts Collision, this is for New York State residents only. They're in upstate New York. HeartsCollision.com, 518-477-7937. That's Alex and Lori. They're little Al's parents and great people, and give them a call. They will do you right. HeartsCollision.com. We also got our buddy Donnie Giafardino. That's 8xclub.com. These are, well, they look a little smaller than Indian clubs. They look more like a good-sized baseball bat. And what you do with these things, the end screws up on you, and it has little knobs on the bat itself, and you can take anywhere from a 2-pound to 25-pound weight. It goes right on those knobs. You turn it back down, screw it down. It's the best thing I've ever used club-wise. Donnie had a major shoulder injury. He couldn't get that thing straightened out for 10 years, and he wouldn't go under the knife. Once again, shows entrepreneurship and creativity can really change your life. He came up with this idea. The quality is better than better. Donnie's going to be on here next week, and we're going to talk about my first week with it. So go out to 8xclub.com and tell Donnie Motivation Muscle sent you. Another big thing, FiorelloBarbellCo.com, the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle. This is a free ebook. Just leave your email address. It's 10 paragraphs, basically, to make you think, to commit to something, and to take action. Real simple. That's the way I do things here. Secondly, we've got a FiorelloBarbellCo.com, too. Strength times power equals success and the winner's circle. These are the two biggest products I've built to date. Strength times power is all shot in HD. And this is the stuff that I use, basically, when I took Dennis, who was 267 pounds, pre-diabetic, and knocked him down to 224 in 6 months. This is a life-changing thing, and I use most of the movements here, not only on myself, but on other people that I train and whatever we're going to do. It's very applicable to anything you want to get into, so check that out. Winner's Circle is 27 to 34 minutes of me speaking, all audio. This is the big ticket one here. This goes from everything from my beginnings to the power rack to building huge arms, not thinking the way you normally would be told. Obviously, the mental thought that goes into it. We do a big thing with iron boots, big stuff with sandbags, stones. It's all there. You can take these routines and plug them in fully or take bits and pieces of it. So go out and check that both of these items out on FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Obviously, the big thing here is sponsorship to keep this thing rolling here. $500 a month, but I'm doing anywhere from 5 to 15 podcasts a week. You're mentioning in the beginning and the end of the show, sometimes in the middle if we're talking about something that's prevalent to whatever it is you're selling. We're going to be around for 25 years, and with sponsorship, $30 comes off that and goes to muscular dystrophy. As everyone knows, my brother Jimmy died of muscular dystrophy, and both FBC and M&M are both dedicated in his memory because that was a kid that never gave in, and I'll tell you what, he had a smile on his face every day. How many people do you know that are like that? But let's do that, especially with flu season coming and everything. These flu shots are important. That's where the $30 go. Jimmy got the flu, basically started out as a common cold. You know, my father is in the hospitals for years. He had a big job in the VA, and my mother's been a nurse since the beginning of time. There's a lot of that in our family, all in the medical profession. They couldn't save him. We lost him. So it's very important to me, and it's very important to promote our brand and your brand. And if you need that done, Chris Bigelow of MonsterDevelopment.com, 800-687-1609. Give him a call. Today we have our regular monthly guest, and this is a gentleman that I've known for about 7 years now. Bill Crawford is with us. For those of you who are not familiar with Bill, Bill's an Olympic lifter. He's a Highland Games competitor. I feel he's one of the best stone lifters I've ever seen in the world, and I don't say that lightly either. Bill's a writer for Milo. He's been with Milo probably for at least 10 years. I think Bill's a big-time motivational speaker, too. He's involved in a lot of good things. And we're going to talk about two things today, but before we get into the stones of Lotcher and Legenstein, Bill lost somebody very dear to him. We lost a big guy in the strength world, was Jack King. And we're going to get right into that. But before we do, I'm going to bring Bill in, and Bill can give a little bit of bio on him, and we'll start right in. Bill, welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for having me on again. It's always a privilege.
Thank you.
And you're right. This week, Jack died, and he was 77. It happened over the last few years he's been ill, but 5 years ago, I went to his gym, and he was doing chin-ups with a 50-pound dumbbell around his waist at age 72. So, you know,
yeah,
it's you gotta say that he definitely kept going and got every ounce of everything out of himself. You know, definitely with me, he was a giant in my life. I know that, and I know he has a lot of other great lifters that he trained and worked with and knew, and as I've told you before, he and Bill Starr were very close as well. So,
mm-hmm. Well, Bill, I mean, you know, you go. Just say a few things. So, you know, I know we've talked about Jack on the show, but as a young man, Jack was very, very big in your life, obviously, because, you know, was it your uncle that got you involved with him with the Olympic lifting? That's how you go back with Jack.
Yes, my uncle is actually my grandfather's brother, so he was actually my great uncle who had been a competitive Olympic lifter and competed actually with Bill Anderson back in the day, back in the 50s, and so he got me into Olympic lifting. So the first exercises I learned were the snatch and the clean and press. And I did that for a long time before I learned anything else, but he fed me, he handed me over to Jack and I would drive the, you know, hour or so it took to get to train with Jack, two or three times a week. Mm-hmm. And, Jack was always, he just knew what he was doing. He always knew how to look at a lifter and see what they needed and how to motivate people. And he also, sometimes I just thought he was trying to kill us, but in the end, he was making us better lifters. One of my friends did something stupid and drove his car, you know, kind of was doing donuts and stuff in a parking lot that happened to be next to the police station in Winston-Salem. So they took the kid's car, and that was my training partner. So Jack took the keys for my car, too, and I was living it. You know, I'd moved to Winston to train with him. So what happened was, I ended up riding my bicycle up and down these hills in Winston-Salem, which is a very hilly city if anybody's been there. And then we also did a lot of squatting for about a month until Jimmy got his license back. So not only did we have to ride our bicycles everywhere, we did a lot of squats.
Yep.
And honestly, our legs just grew like crazy.
Yep.
And then afterwards, when we started doing the Olympic lifts, you know, more intensely again, we all were better lifters.
Yep.
So he took this thing and he latched me to my teammate. Yep. And said, you know, you guys are in this together.
Yep.
And because I was pretty mad at Jimmy, like, oh man, I can't believe we're having to do this. And that was back when kids would listen to, you know, to people. But in the end, he took that negative and you know, the proverbial made lemonade out of lemons.
Yep.
and made us better lifters out of the experience, and also made Jimmy and I much more together with our lifting and the other guys that trained with us. But that was the kind of thing that he did, and he always knew how to how to get the most out of you and how to look at you and assess what you needed. You know, the motivation that he would give you was always kind of, you can't do that. He sort of was like a, he was more of a almost pulling you along rather than pushing you into it, telling you, you're the best, you're the best.
Yep.
I'm not sure you can do that. And he, and the personality of somebody, of the people he would do that to, they'd say, I'm going to show him.
Yeah.
So I ended up living my life to prove something to Jack King.
Yep.
And then that went on afterwards. And then, you know, when I started thinking about medical school, he was, you know, he knew how well I was doing in college and all. And he said, you should go to medical school, because actually his gym was just a couple blocks over from the Wake Forest Medical School.
Yep.
Ended up going to medical school. And it was, you know, a large part was the discipline and the understanding that I had of myself by being around Jack.
Yeah.
So he not only helped us become good lifters, he helped us become men and better people.
Yep.
You know,
Bill, that sounds like, I'm a big fan of Vince Lombardi, same thing. You know, I mean, he didn't just create football players. Look at everybody that graduated from his program. Everyone was successful in private industry, whether it was their own business or working for Fortune 500 companies. It's amazing what a real mentor can do for you. And, you know, when you talk about driving an hour and all that stuff, you know, do you remember reading like all those old stories, like whether they're an Iron Man or, you know, earlier Milo or the Hard Gainer? And we used to do that too. I mean, we'd walk in blizzards to go to the Y. We'd walk up to it was called the Steel Pier then. It was like 20 minutes from my house by car. We'd ride our bikes or whatever we did. It's amazing when you want to do something, and I hate to sound like nobody does it anymore, but you don't really see that a lot in kids anymore. They don't. Well, most of them probably own cars when they're 16. You know, if I was going to own a car, I'd have to go out and somehow earn the money to get it. When you come from a large family, you know, cars were not going to be something my parents were going to invest in you. So, you know, my father's attitude was, if you want it bad enough, you're going to have to go work for it because I can't afford it, which is a great way, you know, I mean, but you know, I can remember that stuff, man, going down the Y, being wise with those guys, and they'd kick our ass, you know what I mean? And then you get a couple guys that were all right with you, and they teach you stuff. And it was the same way with the Steel Pier. It teaches you a lot of things. It really teaches you discipline like you're talking about. But it you have an incentive. You know, if you want to get big and strong, you know, all right, you got to travel maybe 25 minutes on your bike no matter what. Or you got to walk. Well, you're going to find out what you're made of just trying to get to your destination. So when you're talking about that, I was just thinking about when we were kids doing all that stuff.
And a lot of people do have those stories. The other thing that I got was that my uncle, you know, I was, you know, 16, 17. I was a football player, wrestler. I've actually had a lot of success as a wrestler also, you know, because of my strength training, I'm sure. But, yep. He wanted to show me a really strong man. He said, I'm going to show you a really strong man. And I think we're going to a gym. I'm excited. Put me in the car. We drive like, I don't know how far we drove. We get out in the middle of nowhere and we go to this sawmill.
Yep.
And we walk in this building and there's just men in there sawing logs. And I'm thinking, is this a joke? And he walks over and I met this man. I wish I remembered his name. He was probably like 60 years old. He was smoking a cigarette.
Yep.
He had a pair of dungarees and work boots and a t-shirt with holes in it.
Yep.
And he must have weighed $160.
Yep.
I will say this. Immediately I saw his hands and his forearms were something I'd never seen before.
Okay.
And so his job was to pick up logs on one end and feed them into this big saw to cut them in half, and then take that half and then basically, you know, kind of reduce it into a more workable size. And then the guys down the line would then take those larger pieces and make them into, you know, boards and whatever they're going to do. So, and posts or whatever. So, so he walks over and he picks up the end of this log. It was probably 20 feet long. And now I'm going to say this, and this is the truth. It was probably 18 inches in diameter.
Holy God.
So he picks it up and slowly and carefully feeds it into the saw to make two perfect halves.
Yep.
And then slide two out and then does it again. And they said, and they pulled another log over and they said, okay, your turn. So the first thing you had to do is you had to pick up one and put it up onto the end of the table where the saw was, right?
Yep.
I couldn't pick it up and put it up where the saw was. So here I was like, oh, you know, I can deadlift, you know, I was all proud of myself. I can deadlift 450 pounds or whatever.
Yep.
You know, I can bench press 300. I was like all full of myself. And here's this skinny guy smoking a cigarette. He walks over and just plucks this thing up and just puts it right up on that table and walks in the other end. Lifts it up and not just picked it up, but like pushes it through this thing 20 feet and did it carefully. And I, you know, just holding it and cradling it in his arms, I'm thinking, this is impossible. I have no idea how this guy's doing this. Now I know that log probably 500 pounds, 600 pounds?
Easily, probably, yeah.
You know, and he was handling each end of it like a toy. And that would just amaze me. So that was one of the best things he taught me. The kids today they think, you know, I'm great, I'm great, I'm great. And they get pumped full of I'm great, I'm great, I'm great. And so defeat or reality, the actual reality, doesn't hit them. So that was one of the best lessons I ever had. And I always took that with me, that no matter how strong you are, there's another guy out there. I always say the world's strongest man doesn't even know it.
Nope.
It's probably some guy on a loading dock in Russia or some Samoan who has to carry sheep around or something, or farm or whatever.
Yep.
I'm just saying things, you know, like you know, so I like that guy, you know, Reagan Bridge from New Zealand. I think you read my article in Milo about this guy, you know.
Yep.
He was a sheep farmer down in New Zealand who just lifted these massive stones. You know, when people, Jono McFarlane went down to see him. He was New Zealand's strongest man. He went down to see him, and Jono came back and said, this guy's real.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
This guy can literally shoulder a 500-pound stone.
Well, and you sent me one of the shots of him, and we're going to post that too. I remember reading about the article you wrote about him, but I've seen him in other things too. You see him. What's really cool as hell, he's got like the leather sewn right in the front of his friggin' pants and shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's cool stuff, man. Because you know who I heard from? Roger Davis the other day. I heard from
him. Oh, wow.
And, we were talking about Peter Martin and stuff, and I can't remember the gentleman's name. I'd have to look it up. He contacted me, and they're probably going to come on and do some stone shows. But right now, Roger and a few of them were like, just give us a little time because they're really in mourning right now about Peter.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like with Jack King, you know, and you got these types of men out there that, they made a major dent in the world. And I know that the community of lifting is not overly large, but, you know, I think it's a very good family, the majority of it. And when you lose people like that, that's why I'm I don't know what word I want to use. So involved with people like a John McKean or a Bill Hinburn, because see, we're losing these guys one by one now. And I want to see if we can get all the information and get their, you know, all their years. You know, Bill's got over 50 years in the industry. It's like we're not going to – who do we have coming up like that? I mean, there's a lot of people that got knowledge, but that type of knowledge is very hard to find, and we're losing more and more. You know, you lose a Bill Starr, you lose a Jack King, you lose a Peter Martin, you know. I'm trying right now. We want to get Daniel Webster on the show. You know, things like that, because at least we're always going to have them verbally here.
David Webster. Yeah, you should. That's another dear friend of mine, and I can tell you that if he doesn't know it or heard of it, between him and Terry Todd, if they've never seen it or don't know it, it probably doesn't exist.
Exactly.
I mean, you sit between these two guys and listen to what they've seen and heard and know, and the people they know, it's profound. I mean, it's profound.
You made reference to, it's like, you know, you got a hell of a shot. You got a once in a lifetime shot with Jack King, because not many of them come around in a lifespan. But think about this too, how fortunate we all are. I mean, you can still go out and lift, man, and lift rocks and go out. You there, Bill?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
Okay, because we lost you for a second.
Yes, I know. Sorry.
But what I was reiterating to is, you know, the ability to be able to go out and do this, and you know, we talk about different things you want to do, and maybe you want to go another place and lift this and do that. Just think how lucky everybody is to be able to formulate those things and then physically carry it out. It's not everybody has the opportunity to do this or wants to. And my question is, why not? You know, why don't you want to take a gamble on yourself and go out and do these physical activities? Because anything you're reading all over the place, go out and lift a few days a week. You know, your mind improves dramatically. You know, obviously, you know, as you get older, you start losing muscle. Well, try to put the brakes in on that. Keep trying to make your ligaments and tendons and bones and muscle deeper and stronger and thicker. This stuff is just a win-win. The problem I see with everything that we do, a lot of people have mishandled it, mismarketed it, taken people in, not really knowing what they're doing. They get injured. They don't want to go back to this type of stuff. And they kind of live that mediocre thing where, well, you know, I'll just do some light stuff, or, you know, if I walk once a week, that would be enough. Well, it's not enough. So I think that you know, and I've been very lucky. I had a guy, Craig Morrison, that was very instrumental in my training, old school guy, you know, guy of the Iron Man era, that helped out a bunch of us. And we used to go down to his house and train, learned a ton of stuff from him. So I think that we've had some good people in our lives, and now it's up to us to just keep pushing out what we know. Let's get into Lotcher and Legenstein. I mean, this has been a big – I've been – for everybody out there, we went to these various places on the Iceland tour we did in 2008 with Bill and Peter Grudmundsson. Bill, let's talk about these. I mean, Husafell is the stone. We know that everybody knows the Husafell stone. Well, we think we do. But I've got an awful lot of questions on, well, can you name a few other stones that you've either been involved with or you know about? And I figured you being the guy that really is the Iceland guy out there, let's talk about them. And before we hit them, how did you – I know probably Peter, he knows so much about the history and the other gentlemen that were there. How did you find out about Lotcher and Legenstein initially, and what piqued you to want to go there?
Well, obviously the stone lifting circle is pretty small.
Yep.
And I went on the stone lifting tour with my friends Dana Florence and Eric Sauve, who are they're also giants in my life as far as. You know, these guys, we used to train on the weekend. We still train a few times a year. Honestly, you know, I don't think we realize what we're actually doing. We just crazy stuff, man.
Yeah.
This is,
yeah.
You know, lifting some amazing, doing some amazing stuff. And just as routinely, and we didn't pat ourselves on the back. We kind of were at each other pretty hard. We call ourselves morons. The more on the bar, the better.
Absolutely.
So, we're sitting at the Blue Lagoon on our way back from Scotland because we took Iceland Air. We're flying back, and we said, yep. "Man, we should be going to Husafell." And sure enough, yeah. You know, we talked about it and dreamed about it for years. So we started the planning process, and then about 8 months later, you know, found ourselves in Husafell, Eric and I, and then I started talking to Peter Goodmanson, you know, through Highland Games, and.
Yep.
He said, "Oh yeah, there's the Stones of Dridfik," and that's actually that the Stones of Dridfik are actually in the in Peter Martin and Steve Jack's book,
correct?
Strength of Stones and Strength, and but then there's other stones, and I start talking to Magnus because he's been, you know, I've known Magnus for quite a while now, and he goes, "Oh yeah," he says, "there's this place called Lautra and or Lautra as people say, but they say Lautra." So
Lautra,
and they
yep.
And he told me about the Brynjolfsstokk. That 620-pound column of stone that just
yep.
kind of break off the ground, you stand it up and then break it off the ground, and right down the beach is the Judastein,
yep.
the Judas stone, and right down the beach from that are the stones of Lautra. So you've got three named lifting stones on the same beach. I mean, you've been there, and it's also on the
yep.
it's also on the highest cliff in Europe,
yep.
next to the highest cliff in Europe. So it's a very dramatic. Place. I watched the film footage we had the other night of us lifting those stones in Lautra,
yep.
Or Lautrevik, as you want to say. And I had a chance to go back a few years later. Peter had a Highland Games up in that area in Patrick'sfjord there. But anyway, so the stones of Lautra are they're very, very traditional Icelandic stones. There's there's four stones, and you basically put them up onto a plinth and pile them on top of each other. That's the same idea of Dritvik and on the Snæfells Peninsula, Snæfellsnes Peninsula. The problem the problem is that the Snæfellsnes Peninsula, the stone that they used to put them up onto got covered up, is barely above the ground now because of all the sediment from storms that have washed in. But you were in Lautre. You saw that you take the four stones and you stack them on top of each other. The problem is you got to put the big ones up first and then get the little ones on top of that. So you have to actually start with the heavy ones.
Right, and that's the one that claimed my arm, the heavy one.
Yeah, well, also, too, I don't know if you remember, it was kind of it was a rainy, misty day.
I never forget
that.
It was
on the you could feel the very surf pound against the cliff below us.
Yep. You remember the water would keep coming up?
Yeah, the water, the spray would hit, would come up onto us, and very dramatic scene, and you know the green roiling sea around us, and then that's kind of the idea that you're in this very very stark and primitive atmosphere lifting these named stones. But the heaviest of the stones weighs about 400 pounds, and the second heaviest about 360, and then there's a 300, and then a 220. So, and the problem is that the smaller the stones got, the more smooth they got. You remember?
Yep.
So
yep.
The heavier stone actually had a little grip to it. So the 400 pounder, frankly, was a challenge, but there were no great shakes going down in weight because they got smoother and more difficult to lift because of the smoothness as you went down in weight. And then you're trying to carefully position them up onto the other stones to hold them in place.
You remember Roger Davis that day? That had to be one of the most amazing things I've ever seen anybody do.
I did it the other night when I was looking through the video.
Unreal.
Pictures into you. It took him – this Roger fought that same stone, that 308-pound stone, for 14 minutes.
Yep.
He lifted it and relifted it. And it just basically kept attacking that thing till he stood up with it for 14 minutes. Now you show one other human being who has that much fortitude.
Yep.
I still say that's one of the most impressive strength feats I've ever seen in my life, based on Roger's body weight and how he just absolutely refused to lift that stone, refused to let that stone not be lifted.
Beat him.
He just kept.
You remember how bloody his forearms were?
He was a wreck after that. I think he was so spent the rest of the trip, that was it. But I have to tell you, that was the signature lift of the whole event. No matter, you know, it's Stefan Solovey and myself and Peter and everybody, you know, lifting stones. That was the signature lift of the whole thing because it really embodied what we were about. And that's what I'm impressed with. It's not just – I might see, you know, just like, you know, there are guys that lift more weights than I do, or I lift more than somebody else, or I can lift a bigger stone than someone, or maybe someone else lift a bigger stone than me. But I'm more impressed by people's heart and effort than I am than actual ability many times, because – and that just underscores the whole thing, that, you know, this stone outweighed him, you know, probably what, over 100 pounds?
I think he was about 162.
I think he might have weighed – he might have said he got his body weight to 175, maybe 180. And the fact that he went on the stone lifting tour to begin with was impressive. Because, I mean, he's standing around all these other guys. You know, we're all, like, you know, close to double body weight of him.
Exactly.
And, you know, he's out there with us, you know, going after these stones. But that was an unbelievable feat of strength. And it really just – that was what stone lifting was about.
Yep.
That was what stone lifting was about. It was man and stone out in the middle of nowhere, pushing himself to the absolute – edge of his existence, you know, that I don't know if you've ever had a chance to listen to Steve Jack's classic Jack, that DVD that I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, I've got it. Yep.
And so, you know, he talks about it's easy to jump up and pump your fist and hoot and holler when someone intercepts a pass and runs for a touchdown. But like he said, I cry like a baby when I see an Olympic wrestler pour every ounce of his guts out on the mat. And stand in solitary triumph, because that's what it's about, you know.
Yep.
It's about doing something yourself.
Yep.
And I'd still say that Roger's example was one of the best I've ever seen.
Without a doubt, he was so impressive. And not only that, you know, when you talk about the solitary, you know, making it, you know, this is what I like about being out alone, and I'm sure you do too. You go and lift something real big, you know. There's no fanfare. I'm standing out under the lights in my backyard where it's all lit up at night. And all that's you is just you and, like, creation around you. And you drop that thing down, and you have a feeling of I don't know if I want to say tranquility, but you have this feeling where at one point you were the most aggressive beast you could be, and once it's done, it's done. And you just stand there kind of in awe of what you've done. And, you know, that to me is the way you're going to have success, especially if you want to go to Iceland and lift these famous stones. Because, all right, you're going to be with a group of guys, maybe you only go one, but the fanfare is not going to be there. And if you can get through anything without people having to clap for you or tell you how great you are, your success is going to be monumental, in my opinion.
Well, that's the key to stone lifting, is that, like you said, you go out and you're by yourself, and you lift a stone. I'm blessed to live in New Hampshire, where we have a lot of natural stones, and so I've got quite a nice collection here of different stones. And so you go out, and maybe it's at night or early in the middle of the day. I'm the only person out there. The first thing I do is roll it over and make sure there's not some kind of little thing that wants to, you know, bite out of my hand.
Yep.
You brush off some of the, you know, dirt or mud or dust or whatever, and you roll it back over and you lift it. And there's no accolade that goes with that. But when you lay your hands on a stone, you're laying your hand on the eternal. In other words, it's funny to me that we've got vaults that try to preserve the paper we've written all our fantastic words on, and our civilization and all our movies and all the things that we've said, and our voices will disappear without us maintaining those things and recreating them constantly. But the Egyptians 4,000 and 5,000 years ago and places like Stonehenge, they basically pounded out their legacy in stone, and it lives today. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's the difference. And so I think that when you go to these great stones, that's what's happened. That say the Denny stones or the Husafell stone or any of these other great stones that have been lifted or carried by great men in the past, that they've made their legacy in stone. And I think once you've made your legacy in stone, that won't be turned around or that won't fade, and it will live. And that's the beauty of that. But also too, just the eternal nature of stone. It's the very thing that our earth is made of. You know, and so it's almost like, you know, when you go to Iceland and you see this great place where it's this stark atmosphere, and we talk about how strong the Icelanders are, that stark existence in Iceland for all those years made those people that strong.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like you're actually going just to pay homage to the very land that made these people so strong. And then they in turn have a legacy amongst themselves that lives on through that strength. And the same way in Scotland, you know, and you could say that about other places like, you know, the Fiji Islands or the Samoans with their stone lifting, or the people in the Basque area. That's why it's so special to me. And no, you're not going to have people, you know, slapping on the back or pumping their fists and, you know, after you do something. Rarely you might if you go to a large, big, you know, some of the strongman competitions. And, you know, World's Strongest Man a few years ago, they lifted natural stones. And that was after I browbeat Colin Bryce about always having the Atlas stones. Get some natural stones in there. See the actual best stone lifter.
Absolutely. You know? Without a doubt. No, you're right. You're right. Look. Here's the deal, too, and you know with stones, I mean, those natural stones are pretty nasty, and I got so many of them here now. I mean, we've got the molds from Slater's. We've built all them. We've got the steel stones we built that we can load and then, you know, load shot in them, all that
stuff.
But when you got
I do love a good Atlas stone. I mean, there's nothing like it. A good Atlas stone will test your very being. There's no question about that. I'm not downgrading an Atlas stone by means whatsoever.
But you know what the whole thing is? You can go anywhere and find stones, and it's a great way to just kind of get acclimated with it, see if you like to do it, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same one when you and I were talking about with you know, starting out with light sandbags, you know, because obviously you want to learn how to do it correctly. You don't want to end up dropping a stone on your foot and breaking your foot or smashing your shin in. But I've got a guy right now, a doctor down in Dr. Jeffrey Smith. He's an MD down in Arizona. and I got him started now doing some dead stop squatting, and I got him going with sandbags, and now he's going and getting stones. He's got 100, I think, in 150-pound stone. He's already starting to walk distance. Now, this is a guy that never had an inkling of doing any of this stuff, and I think the whole deal with this stone and sandbag stuff, Bill, is this. I think it's such a primal thing. If you've got that in you, or you really want to just kind of change yourself, I mean, I never thought this guy would take to it like that. It seems everybody that I get involved with and we start doing stuff like that, after a while, you just can't even hold them back anymore because it's going to be like, well, what's the next thing we can do? Or can I build a stone? Or where should I go get a bigger stone? Or should I, like we were saying, go to Iron Mine. You can get the bags all set up for the stones where you can bag the sand. And then you can put it, obviously, in the big blue, I'll call it like a duffel bag style thing. You can pull the cord and tie it, right?
Yeah.
This stuff is, my personal feeling is, you made reference before we came on about CrossFit. I think we can take what we talk about here and make it, I don't know if I can market it the same way, but it seems to be working quite a bit because, as I told Bill, this is why I wanted to do a show on both of these areas in Iceland is because I'm getting tons of, whether it's a calls left on my phone or texts, or I'm getting something via email or Facebook. People are like, we're getting into stones. We're getting into sandbags now because of the show. Can you bring out more stuff? So I think, I've said this before when I did the weight loss with Dennis, the majority of this stuff was building sandbags with him. Seriously,
doing is actually, if you lift a sandbag for repetitions or carry a sandbag, what you're doing is you're actually building muscle, obviously, and you're also, you're huffing and puffing. Yeah. I always tell people that when I, am in stone carrying mode, or I'm in the middle of lifting a lot of stones, two things happen. One is I do get thick, when I up the ante a little bit and I start to get a little thicker.
Yep.
But I also notice that, I start to drop a little body fat because your body is just in this extreme mode of trying to keep up with what you're doing, and you're burning and you're building muscle. So the muscle metabolizes the fat. I mean, that's a fact that we all know. But like you said, it's primal. I think that's the bottom line. People today are looking for central truth because everyone seems to be confused about so many things that our society has changed so rapidly and so many things have happened that the central truths just don't live anymore. But I think the average person still knows the truth. They just don't have a place to express it. You lift the stone just like a barbell, but like we said before, a barbell was made to be lifted. You lift the stone, and the stone just doesn't care. It's defiant. It doesn't care. It doesn't make itself available to lift. You have to provide everything about it. Now, many times have maybe you'll lift a stone, and I'll chuckle sometimes this happens. A stone I've lifted a bazillion times, and it's a little off weight, a natural stone. It's a little oddly shaped on one side. It'll just roll back on me or flip forward, and I'll drop it when I should have easily lifted it.
Absolutely.
And I think I always chuckle. I say, you're still there, Between your odd shape and the inexorable force of gravity that has its hands on you, you're always going to be like this, and that's the beauty of the whole thing. It is primal, and it's simple.
It
you either stand up with the stone, or shoulder the stone, and press the stone, or you do not.
Yep. And you know what it is too, Bill. I think a lot. Look, this is what I've said to you before. Obviously, you don't have the type of ego where, if it doesn't work out for you, you're not going to be crushed and worrying about people are saying. And that's what I always said, going to Iceland and all that. That was the first time I ever got involved in anything like that, obviously, other than doing it at home. And there was a lot of people said, well, what if you fail or get hurt? Well, I ended up getting hurt, all right? But the point of the matter I've always had with this is this contention. A lot of people are those specialist, as I call them, maybe they're a great deadlifter, maybe a great squatter, and they can do enough in the other two lifts if they're in that type of power lifting or whatever they're engaged in, as you see this all over social media especially. But you know something? Take a lifter out of their element and stick them in, obviously, t- tell them what we're going to be doing. You can train for it, or if you think you're strong enough, you know, don't even bother. You can go over and make an attempt and see what happens. Take them out of their element and stick them in somewhere, say, like going to lift the Husafell stone. Most people won't even attempt it. I don't even care how big and strong and what they've done, because here's the deal. If they go over there and blow it, as they'll see it, suddenly their value in the community, whatever they're involved in, is going to go down, because people then are not going to think you are as strong as you claim you are. Here's my take on everything. I really don't give a damn what people think about me in that context, because I think a true lifter, a true person, and I'm not going to, physical culture to me is just getting beaten into the ground by everybody now. I think anybody that wants to be physically strong, mentally strong, and someone that I admire, like we just talked about Roger, I admire anybody that will go out of their element and take a shot and come back and say, well, I did it or I didn't. I have more respect for you than you would say, well, I can deadlift 1,000 pounds, but I can't lift even a 300-pound rock off the ground. And if I do, I can't get 10 feet because I can't breathe. Okay? Right. So I think the true lifter is somebody that is not afraid to go over and do something where they could fail, and they're not worried about what public sentiment is, and they know in their heart that they're stronger than they've ever been. What do you say to that, Bill?
Well, I think the journey is the bottom line, is the key anyway, because yep. That journey is what made you stronger. That the feat yep. of actually going to do it didn't make you stronger. As a matter of fact, it probably, you know, you might have gotten hurt, or, you know, you've trained yourself up and you kind of peak, and then that's the culmination of those things. So I tell people to enjoy the journey, because in the end, if you make it or if you don't make it, the journey was what it was about anyway. Earlier this month, Stevie Shanks, who's Jack Shanks' son, I wrote an article for Milo about Jack Shanks, Jack was the first guy to in the modern era, I call it, to lift the Denny Stones barehanded. So several had lifted the Denny Stones in Scotland with straps, like David Prowse, who was Darth Vader, and he'd been a Catholic. Nobody knows that, but people were actually starting to say, like, we don't think Denny could have done it because no one can physically lift those stones barehanded. So this 180-pound policeman from Belfast in Northern Ireland trained himself with lifting, doing deadlifts and lifting with rings and stones, and went over and lifted those things. Actually, the picture that I have of him lifting them the first time, he's wearing a tie.
Yep.
He's wearing a tie. He said that the first time that he went, he said there was a lot of media attention because people had called it on him. And he was nervous that he wouldn't make that lift, and he wanted to look good for the camera, so he wore a tie. So that he got there, on Saturday afternoon, and the cameras were going to take the pictures on Monday. So he went and silently lifted the stones on Saturday night by himself, just to kind of put himself at ease that he could do it, and did it on that Monday morning with the cameras in front of him. But his son Stevie actually trained to lift those stones and was successful this past it was 2 weekends ago. And that lift had been set up by our friend Peter Martin, who arranged to have this done, because unfortunately right now they're locked up while they're renovating the Petark Hotel where they normally live. But again, I kept telling Stevie, I said, it's not if you make the lift or not. It'd be great to be able to repeat what your father did, but your father's a legend, and he was, no matter what happens, he was still the first guy after Denny to do it with barehanded.
Right.
I said, the main thing is enjoy the journey. Because you're going to get stronger. And what happened was that he and his father really, they were always close, he said, but it just put them close in a completely different way. Yep. And that was the journey and the closest that came from that. And he said, that was the real value of what I got. So when he got there and he made the successful lift, it was kind of like, okay, I did that.
Yep.
It was almost the afterthought. Now, if you don't make it, I really, really, like you said, I admire people who have the courage to go somewhere and try something and let people know what happened. I hurt or I didn't do it.
Yep.
And, you know, well there, you know, in today's thought, it's like, well, you failed.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't fail. What you did was you gave your best. And in the end, that's all we can all do is just give our best. I just want to, you know, talking to Ed Cohn a few months ago, and he said, the only difference between me and another powerlifter, he says, I just got different results, but I tried as hard as everybody else.
Exactly.
It just so happens I could squat 1,000 pounds because of my build. But he said, but in the end, he said, I just tried as hard as I could like everybody else. And he said, I learned how to learn from other people. He said, it always shocked people that I would watch them lift and I'd ask them questions and they would look at me like, you're Ed Cohn. Why are you asking me questions? He said, because I'm just a lifter like you are. I'm just trying to get to that, to my best. His best ended up being in another
planet, right? Zip code.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I guess like, any other great athlete or competitor, that's the story that I've heard over and over and over. And sometimes the best people that you're going to learn from weren't the best. I wouldn't go learn basketball from Michael Jordan. I'd want to talk to Magic Johnson or Larry Bird or another guy who had to, you can tell that they couldn't fly through the air. They weren't seven and a half feet tall.
Right.
They were physically good enough, but they were physically limited that they had to live the life that would get them to that place. I think that's something we can all learn from and understand.
Absolutely.
And that humility is something that's going to be central to everybody who becomes great will have that bit of intelligence enough to get them to that place. And everybody that will do their best, and I mean great by doing your best might be the best in the world. Your best might be the best in your neighborhood. But if you become your best, I think you become great.
Yes.
And that's the secret to the whole thing. Becoming your best makes you great. Even if you silently carry that greatness with you, it'll show in your life. You show me a guy that has really done some things and then turned into a solid citizen afterwards, and I'll show you people that have a strength and an understanding and a wisdom that is uncommon.
Absolutely. And they are the ones that lead, and that's what we need, because right now we're sorely missing leaders. And I think this whole end of the physical game that we all participate in gives you some of the – I just look at the turnaround on Alex. 14, he'll be 15 in January. The kid was very introverted. But now you ask him a question or now you have him explain things, he's right there in the forefront now.
Right.
And when you can do things like that with young men and women – we're going to have a hell of a cast of people coming up. But if we're going to keep doing this stuff where, nobody's at fault, don't judge, all this BS that's being perpetrated and pushed all through society now, well, you can see what's going on now. If you're not, you're blind to things. And it's like you and I and most people are not – well, I'm not going to speak for you, but I can't live like that. I'm going to have a big
problem.
You can speak
for me because my son was cleaning his room up a few months ago, and I looked in the box. There was a garbage box and I want to kind of keep this box. We'll just rearrange it.
Yep.
And I looked in the garbage box, and there were two trophies.
Yep.
I said, why are you getting rid of your trophies? He said, he picked it up. He said, participant? Really? I got a trophy for participating. He said, I didn't do anything, and I hated going every day. He threw it back in the garbage can.
Good for
him.
Yep.
And then kids know the truth.
Yeah, I know.
They know the truth. This isn't them that's doing this. It's us that's doing this. We're doing it to them. If we let them rise to the occasions and understand that when they do get something, that it really does mean something. A trophy means something. My daughter plays soccer. She's actually a state-level elite player, honestly. And she travels quite a bit. She was in New Jersey to tournament a couple weeks ago. And how many trophies she has for soccer? None. She has no trophies for soccer. Because at that level, the best you're going to do is get a medal. Actually, she went to this big tournament in Vermont. Her team won the thing last year. And you know what they got? A T-shirt. And it says, I didn't buy this shirt. I earned it.
That's cool.
Tournament
now
champion.
That's the way it should be.
And she wears that thing like it's
it's like a tattoo.
Oh, it's
to
great.
Her, man.
She just wears that thing like that's her trophy that she earned that T-shirt. It's a plain white T-shirt. It's nothing special, but she earned it. Kids know We need to give them that chance to understand that. I think we as adults need to go back to that too.
I agree. And you know something, Bill? There's nothing wrong with getting your nose bloodied once in a while, you know?
Uh-huh.
It builds character. I mean, that's the thing. Let's get into Legenstein because I know we've got time coming up and all that. This has got a lot of folklore because I can remember the guys talking about it with the old farmer and everything. So let's get in that. This is going to be very interesting to the listeners.
Well, there's story is that there's a farm in northern Iceland near the Arctic Circle, right up this little fjord. Actually, Peter's mother-in-law owns the farm.
Yep.
It's an Icelandic horse farm, and tourists come every year. We stayed there. It was a beautiful little place, and you know, we ate at the sort of like a small Viking hall. You know,
that was cool, man. You remember when we were down in Black Death?
Oh yeah,
that was awesome.
Sipping on some Brennivin and eating sheep cooked in a cast iron pot. So the Legstein, which means gravestone, basically or tombstone, was a stone that it's a long teardrop shaped stone. It's probably about 4 feet high or about 3.5 feet high, and it weighs 485 pounds. So you stand it up and you lock your fingers and you lift it up off the ground. Lifting it off the ground, it feels like all of a sudden your traps are getting pulled out of your neck because there's so much intense pressure on the back of your neck. Well, there's this large plinth that's there that's said to be the tombstone of this farmer. So basically, the legacy is that the farmer was sitting on this stone, this large stone, and he was lamenting that his farm wasn't doing well. Well, a stranger appears out of the mist and says, "Hey, if you can lift that stone, I'll make your farm better. But if you don't, you know who I am, and you know what I get." It was the devil making a deal for his soul. So basically, it's a recurrent theme throughout many cultures. But so he couldn't lift the stone, and so the devil takes his soul. So basically, there was a minister had heard about it, and he reasoned with the devil. He said, "Look," he said, "you cheated because you reached down and held the stone down, even though this farmer is quite a strong man. He might could have lifted it off the ground." So the devil said, "Okay," he said, "if other men can come and carry that stone around this, you know, his gravestone, this large plinth, 100 times, he'll be freed from the deal." So this stone just lying there, and this plinth would just, this gravestone, as they call it, was just lying there. And we, you know, and Peter heard about this story, and so he said, "Well, here we go. We're just going to pick this stone up and walk it around this plinth and try it."
Yep.
And, we were fortunate to be the first guys to have a crack to get things rolling. I think they're at 30-something laps now.
Oh, really? We got a ways
so
to go then.
The farmer's got some distance. And it was actually – the best part about this is it was actually just a myth that no one believed anyone could actually pick up that stone and
I know.
Actually make
that
a lap
a
with
beast.
It. And it had to be a continuous lap before it counted. So I was fortunate enough to be the first one to make a lap with it. And then Stefan –
I think it was just you and Stephanie,
yeah,
right?
Stefan Solvi, he got around and obviously, I mean, as you would expect him to. And then – but other men have gone up and had a crack at it. And one guy, he said, has gone up every year for the last 3 years. A straw man from Reykjavik has gone up –
oh, cool.
And, you know, it's just something to – it's about a five-hour drive from Reykjavik, and it's a beautiful countryside scene and – they go up and have a crack at it again, but that's the kind of history that are behind these. And I did found out about another stone on the northern shore of Iceland that was supposedly used as an anvil for about 100 years, and it was rolled out of the ocean. And supposedly this Viking had picked it up and carried it out of the ocean. I don't think he carried it. He might have rolled it out of the ocean because our estimation is this thing weighs about 800 or 900 pounds.
Jeez.
But it was a lodestone, so it actually does ring when you hit it. So it did serve as a natural anvil. So I don't doubt that they actually used it as an anvil. I've heard of other stones being used in that way. But that's another stone that does have some history behind it, as a lot of them do. But that's the Legstein. It's in the name of the area that it's in. It's in a they call it Heydalur, H-E-Y-D-A-L-U-R. So it's not actually, it's not on a map. It's a small place.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So it's
well, you remember what did we travel? Was it 1,200 miles in 4 days or whatever?
Yeah,
it was?
We traveled quite a bit. We went from Reykjavik on southwest coast and traveled the western fjords on those terrifying roads all the way up.
Remember that?
And you know, we'd have to get out and you know, stones would roll out in the middle of the dirt path, and you'd look down and it's like an 800-foot drop into the ocean. You'd roll these stones off into the ocean so you could keep driving. And then a tractor trailer would be coming the other direction, then you'd have to pull off. Oh my god!
Yep, it was great. It reminds me when my brother first moved out to Seattle, and we went way out in the woods camping. We were on like those logging roads like that, and it's like you move 6 inches to the right, and no one will ever find you again. You know, you're gone. You're right over. You know, I've got I don't know if I ever told you. I have a picture of everybody around the stone where the farmers buried under, plus obviously the stone itself everybody carried. The whole group of us is around here. I had that done and blown up. It's framed and on the wall in my house.
Wow.
It is awesome,
that
dude.
Is awesome.
And you know, that was the year my nephew graduated from high school, and I gave him that for his graduation. He still talks to it to this day.
Sure.
You know, I mean, what an experience for a 17-year-old kid to have the first time. It was awesome. I mean, Husafell is obviously the big one out of all of them. But you know something? Traveling to all those places, they all had a special thing. I put a picture of we were standing. It was in Dritvik. It was Peter, you, myself, and oh, Jesus, I can't think of his name.
Oh, Tony Aitchison.
Tony Atkinson. Yeah. Great, great shot. And I remember we were talking about how the water would be up to where we were standing at different points. And I think, I want to say, was that the place where that old rusty boat was laying there, too?
Yeah.
Wasn't there?
Yeah.
Got washed up? Yeah. Yeah, it was cool stuff. That, I can see why everybody wants to keep going back to Iceland. I can't wait to get back there. It is really – well, you've been more places, obviously. Out of everywhere you've been, would you still claim Iceland is where you'd like to go if you were going to go and lift stones again?
I'd say yes. I you know, Peter Martin made it more obvious that there are a lot of other stones in Scotland and the Gaelic strength culture, which is a new dimension to the whole thing, and – Gaelic speakers that still hold stone lifting in reverence, that some of them I got to meet last year. But I would still say that Iceland is the place that they as a culture and the people there all understand the stones and their legacy and strength. They understand it. The Celtic stone lifting culture, stone lifting and strength culture is something that actually a lot of the Scots just don't know it, frankly. And that's that's disappointing, but it's true. Whereas in Iceland, they understand it. The average person knows it's there, and they embrace it.
No, I agree with you, because when we were at Latra, I couldn't believe the amount. Like, we had that doctor was there, and was it the chief of police or whoever it was?
Oh, yeah, we went to Patrick's Fjord, and they fed us pizza and stuff to fortify us for our trip out to Latra for stones and – and the whole town showed up to wish us well and go out, and people followed us out and took pictures. And
yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you just won't get in other places, point blank.
No, not at all. And you know, to be, I mean, they weren't 20-year-old kids. They'd been around for a while, and they knew the whole culture of it. Very impressive stuff. Very impressive people. I mean, I've told you before, I could honestly see me living there the rest of my life down the road. I'm not kidding you when I say that either.
Well, I've talked about it too, and I think if I came home and my wife said, "Honey, let's move to Iceland," I'd say, "Pack bags,
we're out of here." We're just about at the end, anyways. I want to ask you one thing though, and I know that you're doing a lot of different things. Any chance you're ever going to go back to Iceland? And maybe, I know you've been there since 2007 with the Husafell. Any chance you'd ever want to do another Icelandic run again, or
me personally? No, I'd like to go with Peter, and I'll go back and lift the Husafell stone. Actually, I was back 2 years ago to help him with the Highland Games, and I'd been, I always lift stones, but I lifted the Husafell stone and carried it. I got it about two thirds of the way around, surprisingly. And I paid for it for the next 5 days.
Absolutely.
My back wasn't in great shape after that, but I just really hadn't spent the time I needed to really make a decent run at it. But to go back to Iceland and lift stones, absolutely. And every time I go there, I find stones and lift them, and just because that's what I want to do. But as far as another stone lifting tour, Peter and I have talked about that. And to organize another stone lifting tour is something I'm very interested in.
I'm going. If you get one, you can sign me up. I'll be
ready.
All
right. Well, let's like to do that. And I think if my problem is, I know that if I went, I'd have to participate and jump in and see what I could do.
Absolutely.
No matter how little it would be, I'd still want to. At 53 years old, I'd still say, I like those things. I like those stones. I'll jump in.
Yeah, but Bill, the deal. I don't go with age on that. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. I mean, it all depends how aggressive you want to be with it, but you're never going to be look at the experience you got. You know how to turn stones, things that people don't know, things I don't know. You and I both know you can't always brutalize something off the ground. It's not going to move. We already talked about, one day you're lifting it, 2 days later, 3 days later, you go to pull it and it's pulling you over practically. And you're like, what the hell's going on here? That is the whole essence, I think, of what we talked about today, man. It's the ability to lift this, and then you might come back 3 days later and it takes you right down to your knees practically. That's what I love about all this stuff. The pain of squeezing so hard with your forearms to keep that thing locked in, the ability to just be able to stand bolt upright and go and move as fast as you can, no matter where you're training this thing, the ability just to grab the thing, even if you pull it 6 inches off the ground, hold it and dump it, It's something I hope everybody that listens to this show, if they're not doing it, I hope they'll go out and buy 150 pounds of sand, start bagging it, and get started. That's I'll finish with that. Summarize any way you want here, Bill. Give any information you want. I'll give mine out. And if you'd hang on the line for a minute, I appreciate
it. Okay, I think the bottom line is, it's like anything else. If you want to lift stones, if you want to get stronger, just go outside and pick up a stone. And everybody's got them around them. I've never found a place that doesn't have some kind of stone that's available. And I've even seen places that if you don't live in a place where you've got good stones that are available in some place, go to a riverbed or something, you can find one yourself. Most landscaping places will have something that you can actually get your hands on.
Yep.
So that's kind of the bottom line there. You can always do it. You just need to have the foresight to just go do it.
I agree, totally. You got anything coming up? Any website, anything like that you want to give out?
At this point, no. We just finished with our New Hampshire Highland Games. It was a big success. I'm looking to hopefully be able to have a chance to go back to the Arnold Strongman and maybe help out with that again. But really looking forward to efforts around Highland Games for next year. World Championships are back in Scotland, and still cultivating local lifters and stone lifters. I don't have anything exciting right now. I think I've gone through several big things this year already, and I'm going to recalibrating a bit and getting my batteries juiced up.
Yep. Well, it'll be good, too, because we'll get into some Highland stuff, too, because I told Bill offline, Dan McKim was so happy with this show. He wants to come on anytime. I want to bring him on, and for this show's going to be up in the next few days anyways. Matt Vincent will be on here in early November with us. So, and then we got Rainer Wartell, who's over in the Netherlands. We've got some big, big people on here. And we're going to, as Bill says, we're going to juice this up big time. Next year we'll go into some more, but we've got some time here. We've got some awesome people on here, and it's growing and growing. And my vision for 2016, I was telling Bill, we're going to get into stone lifting big time, whether it's technique, whether it's different types of stones, whether it's going to Iceland, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to keep expanding on this because the feedback I'm getting stone-wise alone is unbelievable. And I think we've really kind of blew out a hornet's nest here, where I think Bill and I were talking about CrossFit, how that caught fire. Obviously stones and sandbags are a little different, but I'll tell you right now, I'll give you something right now. I'm doing a little Al that will make a monster out of you. Take a sandbag, start lifting it to each side of your shoulder. So go right, go left, go right, go left. Do it for the amount of reps you want, and then grab something and bear hug it and walk it as many times as far as you want to go. I like setting egg timers. Sometimes I'll set them for 20 to 25 minutes. Get a good warm-up in before, get a little huffing and puffing going. Do those two movements for a month and then and get a hold of me and tell me what you look like. So, Bill, we're all set there. I'll give you my information now. This is Motivation Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials. That's www.docsprefer.com. Sorenex.com, 803-978. 2253, give it extension 111. Hearts Collision, 518-477-7937. And don't forget about www.adexclub, that's adexclub.com. Donnie Giafardino is our good friend, and we're glad to have him aboard, too. Go out and download the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle from FiorellaBarboco.com. 10 real easy, just easy, simplistic paragraphs to read. It'll make you think. That's all you need to do. Think and take action. Think, create, just like we talk about here. Next, the strength times power equals success and the winner's circle. Two of my biggest things I've done to date as far as weight training, motivation, all those good things. And I believe that they are life-changing. And I did it with Dennis. I've proved it. If you want to take me on, be my guest. I'd be glad to work with you. So that's out at FiorellaBarbellCo.com. Don't forget about sponsorship, $500 a month, but you get 5 to 15 shows a week, and $30 goes to muscular dystrophy, and that could be the big game changer where you could save a child's life, hopefully a flu shot, and this will maybe limit them getting common colds, which turn to pneumonia, which turn to their death. Very special to me. I'd appreciate it. And hang out with us. We're going to be around for at least 25 years, and this company is going to grow to over a million strong listeners. I promise you that. And I'm glad that Bill and a lot of other people are part of this because they bring so much to the table here. And we try to work with them any way we can and help them out on their end. So go out to Fiorella Barbell Co. and motivationmuscle.com. Don't forget to Chris Bigelow, do anything you need for branding if you want to come aboard with sponsorship, 800-687-1609, or go out to monsterdevelopment.com and tell them Eric sent you. Also, too, a few announcements, too. I'm going to make them quick. We've got some great people that have just jumped on board with us. It's unbelievable what's happening here. We got Ingrid Markham now, who's going to be a regular on here in 2016. Go out and check out the interview I did with her. She is awesome. She was doing gymnastics at 2 years old, USA bobsled team, et cetera, et cetera. Great girl, beautiful woman, man. I can't wait to have her on. She's so excited about coming on in January. So, Ingrid, thank you for that. Also, don't forget Train and Gain with my co-host Aaron Mackin. That's on Sundays. We give you the workout of the day. She gives you the post-workout drink. The one I'm going to put up today is a pumpkin protein smoothie. And she gives you the meal for the day. Wait till you see this one. This is venison Hungarian stew. Wait till you see this recipe, man. It is I'll tell you what, as we used to say, you eat like that, you can put weight on a rake. All right, if you know what I'm talking about, a rake handle. So check that out. And obviously the big thing I announced was the show Bill and I were doing today, and I'm going to put up some more of the pictures Bill was so kind to send us of obviously all the Icelandic adventures. Don't forget to go out to FiorellaBarbellCo.com, MotivationMuscle.com. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher. That's all we've got, and I thank everybody for that. We're on Facebook at Fiorella Barbell, Motivation and Muscle. We're also on Twitter at Fiorello Eric. If you'd like Bill and I to do a specific show, just send an email to FiorellaBarbell@NICAP.R.com. I'm sure we can accommodate you on that. Remember these four things. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, don't be afraid to give them your time. Words are the best thing you can give to somebody. They can hurt, but boy, they can heal, and that's what we're about. Secondly, as my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to give somebody a smile or a hello that day. That might be all they get. Next, go out today and just twist some iron up. grab some stones and turn them into dust. And don't forget this, our brand new Hoosa Steel Crusher Stone has domination on blood red and blood red on both sides. We are domination. We are over a million strong. And remember this, nobody will ever clip our balls. And as our good friend Russell Furr says, when I listen to your shows, it just looks like there's testosterone dripping out of my speakers. Thanks, Russell. That's the nicest thing you can say to me. So, Bill Crawford, thank you, sir. You're welcome. For Bill Crawford, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening. We'll have Bill on next month, and I'm sure we're going to have something big for you. So we'll talk to you this afternoon, and we got stuff on the weekend, and we'll talk to you, I don't know, every day it looks like. So stay tuned.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.